G'day and welcome to the very first podcast for Psychobilly Australia, the podcast. I'm your host, Wolfman Dan. Many, many years ago, I used to co-host a radio show called Lick It Up and Lack It Down in Sydney. And one of the things I absolutely loved about doing radio was interviewing guests and finding out how they tick and, you know, where they got their inspiration from. So I thought, why not turn that into a podcast and delve into the minds and find out where exactly a lot of the Australian psychobilly bands get their inspiration from and, you know, find out what they're up to, things like that, just so we get to know them a little bit better. Anyway, my very first guest for the first podcast for Australian Psychobilly, the podcast, is Jed from the Flamingalas, a Sydney-based psychobilly band. Been around for a few years now, but I hope you really enjoy this interview. I did it over the weekend, so please let me know what you think, and yeah, please enjoy. Jed, thank you very much for joining me today on this lovely warm Sunday. What's it like over in Wollongong?
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's bloody lovely, actually. It's a little bit overcast, but it's been a nice day.
It has been a nice day indeed. I've been outside doing lawn work. And
all the fun Sunday things.
Yeah, all the Sunday dad things, mate. That's what it is.
Yeah, man.
All right. So look, one of the first things I really wanted to ask you was, like, where did your love for music come from? You know, it's like, and how did that sort of evolve into you creating and playing music?
Well, basically,
it's been with a banger.
Yeah. No pressure. No, music's been a part of my life all the way. Ever since my mum was pregnant with me, basically. She used to listen to music, put the speaker by her stomach and shit like that. Yeah. And growing up, my dad always used to play a lot of Trojan, reggae and ska, that sort of stuff when I was very little. Mm-hmm. So I've always had a love for that because of then. Yeah, the older I got, I started getting more into finding things on my own, but also his musical taste was a big influence my whole life.
Yeah,
I've discovered I discovered punk rock basically around the time when Don't Shoot Me, but Green Day's American Idiot came out. That was a big album for me when I was only about 7 at the time, but I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've kind of, it was before that or just after that, I got given my first guitar.
Right, yeah.
Just a shitty acoustic guitar from a catalogue. It was actually a friend of my nan's was going to give this guitar to either one of my cousins. Mm-hmm. Then that day decided they would end up fighting over it, so gave it to me.
There you go. And that's a great way to end up with your first guitar is, you know, over other people fighting over it. That's great.
Yeah. I was in the just right place, right time.
Yeah. Did your folks play any sort of instruments or anything like that?
Not as such. My dad tried to learn the guitar a couple of times before then. He just knew a few chords, basically, and had a Burt Weedon instructional video.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah, just... he taught me the very basics. The first two chords I learned were C and G7, and Smoke on the Water.
Of course, everyone's
got to learn Smoke on the Water.
If you don't know Smoke on the Water, then are you really learning guitar? I don't think so.
No.
Well, that's awesome. So you got your first guitar. So how long did it sort of take you to become sort of fluent in playing the guitar?
I think within a couple of years, really, like nothing incredible, but just, you know, a grasp of like power chords and things like that were the first things I learned a few open chords. And then yeah, power chords from, I had a few guitar tablature books. So one of them was just like a classic, like a Ode to Joy Beethoven stuff like that. Da, 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 da. And then, yeah. I had a couple of Green Day books, one for the American Idiot album, one for like their best of international super hits. So the tabs for them songs. And I also had a Clash one for the think it was the London Calling album, actually.
Yeah, right. Okay. Awesome. And
Um,
so, and when was it that you thought, oh, I'm actually going to start my first band, or I'm going to try my first band, or join my first band?
I always wanted to. That was always the. I used to stand in my living room playing. So by the time I was 8, I got my first electric guitar for my birthday. I just used to stand in the living room playing it really loud, imagining the members of Rancid were going to walk past my back garden and ask me to join the band. So I always wanted to do it, but it wasn't until I think I was 13, 14 for the first band, roughly.
There's
Well,
an angry
before
band.
that, I had a little thing in high school, my first year, with a kid that was just learned a basic drum beat, but that never got out of a rehearsal room at school.
And so, with all that, like, how did you actually get into psychobilly? It's like, it's because it, let's face it, it's not something which everyone kind of falls into. It's like,
It's very niche. Basically, like I say, my dad's musical taste has just been a big influence in my life. When he was always into alternative music. He was From when he was about 10, he was like a skinhead into two-tone and that sort of stuff. And then he had a couple of years where he got into psychobilly too, from when he was about 14. I first heard psychobilly when I was about, I must have been about 10. I can't remember exactly, but I think it was in between little school and high school. My dad came home from a scooter in parts fair with a Demented Argo CD.
Oh,
So yeah, it's
okay.
like, I think it was one of their live albums from the Charlotte in Leicester. I can't remember the name of the album now, but I thought, what's this weird shit? What's going on with this geezer's voice?
I know, right? It's nothing but gravel. That's
Never heard anything like it. So
Yeah,
then,
Sparky's got one of those voices, doesn't
100%, so distinctive, and no one can copy it.
Yeah, no. And so it was Demented Argo that was pretty much your first sort of introduction to psychobilly, was
Yeah,
it?
I remember at the time I didn't really like that live album, but then he got a few weeks later, he brought home the Satan's Rejects, the best of Demented Argo,
Ah,
and
yes,
instantly with that, I think it's Rubber Rock, the first song on that, with the typical psychobilly riff, the dinga 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 ding. I heard that and was just it blew me away, honestly. Like, I never heard anything like it. The very clearly like rockabilly 50s guitar sort of lead breaks in that song as well. Like, Dick Thomas, their guitarist from that first early days and first album, is one of my guitar heroes, His whole sound is amazing.
All right. That's awesome, man. That's like, for me, sort of my introduction to psychobilly was actually The Living End, who aren't psychobilly in the, who don't claim to be psychobilly, but they've always had like these elements to there.
Yeah,
I
for
always thought,
sure.
hey man, this is so cool. This is absolutely wicked. And I remember I was driving up to driving with a friend. I wasn't able to drive at the Didn't have my license at the stage, and we were driving up to a big festival up in Queensland called Livid, and on the way, my friend that was driving played one of the albums from the Sharks, and so one of the first songs that I ever heard from an actual sort of psychobilly band was Hooker by the Sharks, and so man, that was
Excellent.
such a fantastic introduction to psychobilly. And so that kind of just made me go, man, who else can I listen to? Because this is absolutely wicked. I always sort of describe psychobilly as it's got the cleanliness, a lot of the time it's got the cleanliness of rockabilly, but it's got that anarchy. It's got the anarchy. It's got that crossover with punk rock that, people just don't give a shit, and people want to have a party and have a good time, and so
Yeah,
that's the way
exactly.
I always
For
kind of
me,
described
it's rockabilly without the limitation, rockabilly with the
it.
freedom to do whatever the fuck you want.
Precisely, and that's fantastic. And so I'm guessing then one of your first sort of real psychobilly sort of influences then would have been Demented Argo. Where did it sort of go from there?
Demented were the first band I heard. Then the meteors. My dad had the LP, the Curse of the Mutants. I think it's the bootleg one, but the it's basically Wrecking Crew, but with a couple of live versions and like alternative takes of songs, I think, from
Yeah,
memory.
right. Yep.
From there, this around this time is when I first got on the internet as well. So as a kid, I didn't have any of that. So then, yeah, that opened up the heaps more for me. With I got on WreckingPit.com,
Yes.
Psychobilly Online.
I was all over that. That was one of the first places I kind of visited, and I thought, man, this is fantastic.
So yeah, from there I found I think back now. Frenzy, Guanabats, I think Necromantics around that time. Tiger Army too. I've always been, I'd never slate them for anything. They are what they are, but they're good.
Yeah, absolutely. Nick 13 is an amazing songwriter. You know, even his
Yeah,
solo
for
stuff
sure.
I've found is absolutely amazing. You know, it's
I
he's
mean,
a great artist.
they're not someone I listen to a lot now, but at the time, I loved the, especially the first two albums, the Power of Moonlight, I think was the second one. The first one, I can't remember the name of that, but the,
Yeah, I can't.
and then
Yeah,
the,
well,
I think it might have been self-titled actually, just Tiger Army from memory. Then their fourth album too, the, what was that one called? There was Power of Moonlight, the second, Ghost Tigers Rise, then, I can't remember the fourth one.
That's
Music
okay.
from Regions Beyond,
Could
maybe?
be that one.
That was
Yes,
really
I
good.
might.
Had like Forever Fades Away and stuff
Oh,
like
that was a lovely song, wasn't it? Yes, I enjoyed
that.
that one. So now we've got a bit of an idea of where you sort of like influences sort of came from there. I can quite subtly hear those influences in the Flaming Galahs. You know, so I can hear those. Yeah, absolutely. With the guitar tone that you've got and stuff like that, I can absolutely hear that old school sound, you know, from
That's just
Frenzy
because
and
I'm a Yeah, that's just because I'm unoriginal.
But you know, it kind of stays true to like the sound is so like, you know what, that is that old school psychobilly sound, which I've got to say has not really existed long in Australia. We haven't had too many of that old school kind of sound, you know, of like your Sharks and, as I said, sort of Frenzy and all those sorts of guys. It's a lot of it has been around sort of like your Fireballs, where it's for sort of you know, a lot of metal influences and stuff like that, you know. So it's that's one of the things that really grabbed my attention with the Flaming Galahs, or as you guys were previously known, Terra Nullius. Thank goodness you changed that name, by
I know, right? No one can pronounce
the
it. I don't think even I could
way.
properly.
Yeah. That's it. And I guess also, you know, Flaming Galahs has a bit more of that larrikin kind of fun kind of vibe to it, whereas Terra Nullius has that connotation to something else, you know. So
Which we didn't want people to think we was about. And plus, Flaming Galahs is just much more of a fun name, and I think we don't really tend to take ourselves too seriously at all, so we wanted a name to reflect that.
So how did it all begin with the Flaming Galahs, or as it all started out as Terra Nullius?
So when I moved to Australia in 2018, always wanted to do another psychobilly band because it's my one of my main musics that I love. Moved to Australia. We all know Kenji, obviously, from Sydney.
Absolutely.
He's
Kenji, fantastic fella.
Kenji's the most famous psychobilly in the world. So I got talking to him, just saying, "Hey, I'm here. I've got a guitar. Do you know anyone that would want to form a band?" And he put me in touch with Marcio, our bass player. Messaged him over Facebook, and then a week later he came to my unit. And yeah, we just I'd wrote a couple of songs, a couple of them early songs like Night of the Ibis and a couple of others. And yeah, we just jammed them. Just carried on, just played the two of us for a while until we got Max on board. He was a friend of a friend sort of thing. He used to play in a band called Eager 13, a punk band, and I'm good friends with Kaz, their lead singer. So yeah, a couple. He was also playing in a band called Black Rats at the time, another punk band, sort of oi band. And I was friends with their bass player Otto. So he was at a barbecue one day, telling him, oh, I'm starting a psychobilly band, and he said, oh, get in touch with Max, because he's well into all that. He would love to do that. And yeah, went from there, really.
Fantastic. And then you guys added your fourth member then as well, after a little bit.
Juan, he was he came to one of our early gigs. We played a big show at Yuli's Brewery in Sydney. It was the second time we was playing there, and it was we had a band over from Melbourne, The Opposition, a oi band.
Okay, yep.
There's two oi bands. There's them and the backups from Sydney, and Juan was playing drums for a band called Ausentes, who are they're a Sydney band, but all their members are Latin South American, so all of their songs are in Spanish, and they've got a big following in Sydney of all the local Latin guys,
Right, okay, yep.
all the local South Americans. And he watched us play, and he'd never heard psychobilly, never heard rockabilly. He loved every minute of it.
Fantastic.
So a few weeks after that, I think we had mutual friends. He got in touch with me asking. He wanted some advice on guitars, because he wanted to learn this sort of style of playing. And yeah, at the time he was looking for a second guitarist anyway, so it's like, maybe I can make this work.
Mold
Invited
him.
him.
You could mold him into something you guys really wanted.
That's it. Like, at the time he said he was a beginner, so I took that as he'd never played guitar and was learning, but no, he's a virtuoso guitarist but has never played rockabilly. So we invited him down for a jam. It was sort of a rehear a what do you call it, where
Just
you go to,
rehearsal sort of thing. Oh, okay,
I can't think of
tryouts.
the
You
word.
guys are doing like
He was trying out for
tryouts.
the band, but
Yeah.
without knowing it. We just said, come down for a jam, we'll
Yeah,
see what's
right.
what. And then afterwards we said to him, you're really good, you want to join the band? And he was straight away, yeah, sign me up.
Absolutely. That's really wholesome, actually, isn't it? It's like you guys were his introduction to psychobilly, and he actually got to join his first introduction to psychobilly. That's
For
fantastic.
sure. And like, his contribution to the band cannot be understated at all. Like, he understated or overstated, sorry, I'm a bit stupid. He gave this big influence of like traditional sort of South American sort of rhythms and stuff to the way he plays guitar. And it just took us from the where we were starting out to like the next level.
That's awesome. That's a great story, that one. I really, yeah, as I said, that's really wholesome, and it's fantastic. He's somewhat what became part of the family. I unfortunately never got to actually meet him. All these
Oh,
years,
okay.
I never got to
Yeah.
actually sort of meet him. So actually, I may have met him at that
Crowbar,
folk
maybe.
fest at the Crowbar, maybe. Yes, I may have met him
Yeah.
there. I think that may have been the only time. But yeah,
Yeah.
no, he's gone back to Brazil now, hasn't he?
Chile. Yeah.
Oh, Chile.
It's Marcio, the bass player. He's the Brazilian guy.
That's right,
But
yes.
yeah, Juan left in sort of mid-January. He was over here. His wife was studying, so for some for work. So she was just on like a work study. They was both on work study visas. So unfortunately, the time ran out, and they had to go back home. I mean,
That's the way it
I wanted
goes
to,
sometimes.
yeah, I tried to break their legs or something so they couldn't leave, but it didn't help. They
He's
actually,
got strong kneecaps.
he does.
So what are you guys currently up to? You were really kind enough to send me your latest sort of workings, and I've got to say, man, it's sounding absolutely fantastic. I love the sound of
Thank you
it.
very much. Yeah, the minute we just we finished recording our second album, but first under the name Flaming Galahs, so it's kind of a reset in a way. Like, it's the same band but a fresh start, because the first album, yeah, it was I liked it at the time. I still like the songs on it, but I do all the mixing and recording and mastering myself, so it's just a learning process really. Like, I don't like the mix of the first album. Sorry, I'm rambling.
No, that's okay. With the first album, I thought you kind of went for like on a kind of lo-fi kind of feel to it, sort of thing, in a way.
We'll go with that, but that was never the intention. We recorded the first album with a electric drum kit, so it's never quite right. And I had an audio interface with only two inputs, so we just had a cheapo condenser mic and a SM57.
Sometimes that first album is some of the, it's one of the best ways to kind of learn your craft in a way. It's like,
It was a good experience.
it's a fantastic experience. And again, I'll probably try and do this differently sort of thing in the future. And I can absolutely hear it in this, in your latest release. So I can definitely hear the quality is absolutely phenomenal. It's really brilliant. And
Thank you very much.
I can hear the real drums too. It's fantastic. It's
So this album, we've actually recorded it twice. We started recording it in January of last year, 2022. Just we didn't want to record it all in like a couple of days or a couple of weekends. So we basically wrote songs, then recorded them straight after we'd wrote them, written them, sorry. Without learning them first. So the first version of the album sounds a little rushed in places, and I was recording it in a slightly different way. I was recording the drums and the rhythm guitars live in the same room with no separation for a bit of more of a live feel. So it was good, but the maybe three sessions into recording it, the bottom head of the snare drum snapped. We didn't really realize that until we'd finished recording it. And well, we did. That's a lie. I was more thinking, oh yeah, I can fix it in the mix. I can do anything.
We can fix anything in the mix, apparently.
Till I actually tried to mix it in the end, I thought, no, it sounds like a cardboard box. There's nothing I can do. And by that point, Max had left the band anyway, and we got Lockie in on drums. And we thought, yeah, while we've got time, I'd got some time off work anyway because I was about to start a new job, so I took a little bit of time off in between. So I thought, yeah, we'll just re-record it now. I've learned a lot since recording the last version of it. That's taught me a lot. I've got slightly better equipment, more microphones. So yeah, we think in November last year we did a couple of days recording all the drums. Then I put my guitars and vocals on. Then Juan put his guitars, then Marcio put the bass on in the end. And then, yeah, we was never all together to record it except for the backing vocals, unfortunately. But by that point, because we'd played the songs before and recorded them before, we'd been spent a load of time listening to them because we're our own biggest fans. We'd listen to the songs, so we'd actually learnt them and thought, oh, I can play this differently here, or, just we had more of an understanding of what we wanted to do.
No, absolutely. I completely can hear that in the way the songs sound, even like introductions. And you played a little bit more with effects as on your guitar as well, didn't you?
Yeah, there's a couple of songs. Well, one song in particular, I use a lot of chorus. That's Kebab Rehab. There's It's a bit of a weird song, like structure-wise. It's
Yeah, love
well,
that song. It's fantastic.
thank you. Yeah, in between the singy parts, like the verse and chorus, they're all just like your traditional swingy rockabilly. But the bits in between and the solo part, it's all like a fast, more of like a punky sort of style. So yeah, I used a chorus effect on that quite strongly, like quite a noticeable. And there's a couple of songs as well where on Juan's guitar we used like a what was it now, like a phaser and a chorus or something like that to give it a bit of a more of a distinct sort of thing. That was Revenge of the Wasp Man.
I was telling my wife before, it's like you guys have got some great song titles going at the moment, Kebab Rehab, that's something which I've experienced many a time.
Me too.
I used to live around the corner from the kebab shop, and I thought it was a fantastic thing at the time. A year
Yeah, shout
later,
out.
terrible for
Yeah, for sure. Shout out to Sam's Kebabs in Albion Park. Thanks for all the snack packs.
Oh, they get inspiration, were they? So when it comes to your songwriting sort of process, does the music sort of come first, or do you have like lyrics already in mind, or do you kind of follow where the music's sort of going, or what's your sort of process there?
It's different every time, really. Like, sometimes I'll be playing around with my guitar and come and, oh, that sounds really good. I'll work on that, and that'll be a form the basis of a song, just a riff. Other times it'll just be like a Kebab Rehab, for example. It just popped into my head, the title, like Kebab Rehab. Oh, that sounds really cool. I'll
That's fun.
write some lyrics around that. Yeah. And
Yeah.
then sometimes it'll be
See,
just,
yeah,
yeah, carry on.
it sort of intrigues me how people sort of write their music, because as a punter for such a long time, we are a lot of the music, a lot of the mainstream sort of puts out, it's you kind of a lot of it can be heartfelt sort of thing. Like, it's got to have like a story, or it's got to
Yeah.
have some deep meaning behind it, and that's something that people are going to resonate with. And then I saw what I think it was Come Together on Netflix. I think it was Netflix or something like
The
that, with the
Beatles
Beatles.
documentary.
And just Paul McCartney's sort of writing process, it was nothing, a lot of the time it had nothing to do with feelings or emotions and stuff like that. It was just the bloody words fit in the right spot. But it's really sort of interesting how, you do get like your folk sort of music, where a lot of the music can be somewhat emotional and all that sort of stuff, and the lyrics are quite deep and super meaningful. But it's intrigued me sort of like if that was ever sort of a thing for you guys, if you're like, no, I've got these lyrics in my head, I'm going to write the music around it to, emphasize certain parts of it or something like that.
Not really, not for me anyway. I think Juan wrote half the songs on the album, and he's got a, I think he has a very different writing process to me. And his lyrics are a lot more clever than mine. Mine are just, basic, childish fun. But he's more, there's more to them than meets the eye sort of thing. There's more
Yeah,
of a
of
story
course.
behind them. But yeah, with mine, especially with Flaming Galahs, I just tend to keep it fun, childish,
Lighthearted.
things gone,
Yeah.
yeah, light-hearted. I mean, I'm sure I might put more into them again eventually. But I'm in another band as well. I'm in a punk band, Ruckus, and songs for that I can get a bit more serious with,
Yeah, absolutely. Now, one of the things that I really sort of try and advocate for, and a lot of my friends can sort of testify to this, is I'm a massive believer in self-care and looking after your mental health. And so one of the things that I was going to ask you is, what do you do for yourself to sort of look after yourself when you need a bit of time off and stuff like that?
Normally just let everything build up in my head till I have a massive mental breakdown every few months, to be honest.
That's so
It's not by choice, but yeah,
and
getting better. Just my wife Missy, she's amazing, and she's the most supportive person on the planet. She helps me through a
Absolutely.
lot of shit. Just keeps me talking, basically, and not bottling things up. Yeah, I suppose to keep music is my release, really. For that's my happy place. Playing guitar,
Absolutely.
either, recording or playing a gig, that is my de-stressor.
That's your de-stressor. And I've also seen, like, with like you guys get out there and you do bushwalking and all that sort of stuff too. You really try and get out and get in touch with nature, and that's just a fantastic thing. And I think that's something a lot of people, especially if you live in the city, can't really do a great deal of, And so Wollongong's an absolutely beautiful area as well, and so there's so much to check out. And yeah, I really enjoy seeing your photos and your videos of you guys getting out there and sort of experiencing life. It's fantastic.
That's Missy's happy place. That's her relaxing place. She loves, well, we both love it, but going to the beach, going swimming, bush walks. Where we are, we're in a little suburb called Albion Park, and just up the maybe 10-minute drive, we've got Macquarie Pass National Park. So there's heaps of waterfalls and nice walks like that. And then at about 15 minutes the other way, we've got like 50 beaches. There's plenty of all that to do around here.
Oh, fantastic. No, that's what I love to hear. It's you guys getting out there and enjoying both what you guys enjoy, which is your
Yeah,
live music,
you
which
gotta
is
have the
your
balance.
release. You gotta have that balance, absolutely. Now, before I let you go, I just wanted to find out, what can we expect from Flame and Glass in the near future?
Total world domination.
Oh, I like that one.
Yeah, maybe
it's
not.
Common.
But new album. We've not released it yet, so Marcio has actually built. Sorry, carry on.
Have you got a name for that album yet?
I think we're just going to call it Flaming Galahs. Keep it self-titled.
Self-titled? Why not? Absolutely.
Yeah. Marcio has actually built. He's designed and built a record life.
Really?
So, yeah.
Oh wow.
He's like a scientist with that sort of shit.
He's a mad
background,
scientist.
Yeah, his background's electronics. He ended up buying a old, like, 60s, 70s, I think it's like a 70s jukebox.
Yeah,
that
right.
Plays all the old 45s, and it just exploded his brain. So he's built his second record life now. His first one he wasn't happy with. So, yeah, we're looking at doing our own releases, basically.
Fantastic.
I think we're going to do a 7-inch from the album first as like a single, and then release the full thing and just try and play as much. We didn't do many. We only played two or three gigs last year. I think two.
Yeah.
So no, it was three. So yeah, we just want to play as much as we can and start getting a bit of a following, I suppose.
Absolutely, and well, you guys have got a gig coming up in the next couple of weeks with Better Off Ted and Trauma Boys.
Yeah,
both
yeah.
Absolutely fantastic bands. I absolutely
For
love
sure,
the
yeah.
Trauma Boys. The Trauma Boys have got such a unique, cool sound.
Yeah.
I absolutely love it. And of
their,
course,
their album is incredible.
Oh, isn't it something else? Each time I listen to it, I'm blown away each time because I'm hearing something different each time. It's great.
Yeah. It's not your typical run-of-the-mill psychobilly, that's for sure. Like, it's got so much, like, surf and even, like, to me, so I can hear, like, psychedelic sort of influence in it as well, like, with some of the hypnotic sort of rhythms, and, yeah, it's amazing.
And I love it when bands sort of come out with these sort of, like, different sort of takes on sort of things. Like, in America, I think there's the Hypnophonics. They've got, like, this...
Yes, yep.
They do this amazing combination of like garage and psychobilly. It's absolutely fantastic. So yeah,
I don't think I've listened to them actually. I've heard an interview with them from I think Adrian White's podcast. I think he interviewed
correct.
Them. Maybe I'm confusing them or something. Oh yeah,
it's possible. I think so. Yeah, Adrian, because Colin Irvine from The Brains, he's the bass player in the Hypnophonics, and
okay.
That might be the link you might see there because I think he's done a few interviews about that too. So yeah, but yeah, man, I've thank you so much for joining me on my very first sort of podcast.
You're
the first guy I sort of thought about. You know, think this would be fantastic to chat to Jed about, you know, what's going on and you know and what we can sort of expect and get a good introduction to you as well, man.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. It's the first podcast I've ever done.
Oh, there you go. Funny enough, it's the first podcast I've ever done too.
Yeah.
Well, so thank you again, man. It's absolutely a pleasure, and I really look forward to seeing you in the next in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah, man, it's going to be a good gig.
Absolutely, man.
So a bit of something for everyone.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. It's going to be a fun night, and I'm staying with Unky Ricky. So
excellent.
I'm going to be out to have a couple of drinks with you guys too instead of having to drive back to Newcastle.
Yeah, I look forward to it. I'm off the booze these days, so I'll be driving home, but it will be, good to see everyone that we've not seen for a while, really.
Absolutely. It feels like it's been such a long time. But, again, I really do appreciate you joining me on my very first podcast, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your Sunday, okay, man?
Excellent. Thank you very much, mate. You have a good day too.
You too, man. Cheers. Thank you.